It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you very much for joining me. My guest this morning is Dr. Stan Garrett of The Ohio State University, professor of wildlife, as well as the director of the McGraw Center for Scientific Research. And Stan is the leading authority, I believe it's safe to say that, Stan, about you in North America on predators, wildlife, human interaction, and diseases. And you've been on the show many times over the years. Thank you very much for joining us, Stan.
Well, thank you, Charlie. It's my pleasure to be here.
So, Stan, last week in Chicago, we had an incident where a five-year-old boy was attacked by a coyote and an adult man was attacked by a coyote. In your experience around the country, really now the world, is this something that's unique to Chicago? Is this increasingly common around the world with coyotes in urban areas? What is the developing, if you will, situation, and what's your sense as to where all this is headed?
Well, as you know, we've been working on a lot of this human carnivore conflict stuff for a number of years. And it's obvious many people have demonstrated that we have had an increase in attacks on people over the last 30 years. Not just with coyotes, but with large carnivores in general. And it's not just North America. It's actually in other parts of the world as well. But it turns out that coyotes have probably increased at a greater rate than some of the other larger animals. And it's probably because they've moved into cities, whereas many of those larger animals aren't, they're not in cities. And so the potential, I guess the opportunity is just a lot greater for coyotes than it is for the other species.
So historically, aren't coyotes afraid of people? Are they changing in their fear of humans? You go out in the countryside, you go to North Dakota or anywhere that's rural America, and a coyote sees a truck stop and it takes off as fast as it can go. You see a coyote on a golf course in the Chicago area, and it just keeps looking at you. Is something changing?
Well, that's what everyone's curious about, and that's actually what a current focus of our research in Chicago. As each generation of coyotes are born and raised among people, and they don't receive a lot of negative stimuli, it's natural to kind of assume that maybe they're becoming more relaxed and perhaps a bit more bold in these areas. And so we, as well as other researchers in some other parts of the country, like over in Denver, are actually actively testing to see whether or not there's a large-scale shift in personalities, or at least in terms of boldness. It's too early to say that whether there's a pattern there at all. But we do know that, for example, if you go to a national park where there's no hunting or trapping that's taking place for many species, not just carnivores, but also deer, elk, moose, they become much more, comfortable around people than they are out in the country where you have hunting and trapping. And so the same thing takes place in cities, again, where you don't have the threats that people pose that they do out in the country.
So take what happened in Lincoln Park in Chicago last week. Do you have any idea how many incidences there have been over recent years in Chicago or major cities where coyotes have attacked kids or humans?
Yeah, we do. So we keep records on that. In fact, we published a paper on that not too long ago. And across the country, we average somewhere around 3 to 5 attacks on people a year. That's in other cities. So This is actually the first confirmed case here in Chicago. There may be some other unconfirmed cases. There have been some instances where bites have been reported initially in the media as coming from a coyote, but were later determined that it was actually a dog that was involved in that. And in fact, that's actually one of the things that's getting tested right now for these incidents, to make sure that it was actually a coyote that was involved. Even though multiple people witnessed the attack, it's still the first step. So it's been extremely rare in Chicago, non-existent until now. In fact, that's actually made Chicago a bit of an outlier among the other North American cities, because most other cities, at least the cities in the Midwest and the West, where coyotes have been in cities a little bit longer, there are bites that occur, I wouldn't say on a regular basis, but they're a bit more common. So, for example, Denver has had multiple cases of coyotes that have attacked and bitten someone. L.A. is another place where there's been there's attacks almost every year in that metropolitan area. And the same thing is true for some other western cities like Phoenix or Tucson.
So if you're listening to this show, and is it fair to say at this point in time, Stan, that coyotes are pretty much spread across the continent and are in all of our major cities? Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. They're found in every single major metropolitan area across North America. So is one of the reasons why
there's an
increase in attacks.
I'm sorry, Stan. I didn't mean to talk over you. I apologize there. But what can you do? I mean, it's now well documented small dogs and cats are taken regularly by coyotes. What can you do if you're walking in Lincoln Park or walking in any park, St. Louis, Minneapolis, wherever you might be listening, Memphis? What can you do to have a coyote not approach you if it is so inclined to do so? What are some of the things that you can do? And then we'll take a break after you answer that, Stan.
Sure. So if you're walking by yourself or with other people, if you see a coyote, you have an opportunity to teach that coyote to be afraid of you. So you should yell, approach it. Step toward it, get it to run away. You might throw something in its direction to try and scare it away. If you have a small dog, you may want to pick up the dog in your arms, and then in that case, perhaps back away. What you don't want to do is turn your back and run away from it. So those are some easy things to do if you run across one. And then if the animal actually acts bold and stands its ground and growls or does not run away when you threaten it, then that's something you definitely want to report to the agency, whether it's a forest preserve district, park district, or animal control.
So basically, it's what you're taught with other animals. If you turn and run for them, it's either a game or they feel you're prey that's trying to escape them. So the last thing you want to do is turn and run, right?
Right, exactly. Yep.
Well, let's come back in a moment, Stan. When we do, I'd love to talk with you a little bit about some of the cutting-edge research that you're involved with, as technology certainly is changing the whole face of wildlife research, and you're at the forefront of that. We are visiting with Dr. Stan Gill of The Ohio State University and also the director of the McGraw Center for Wildlife Research. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. And first, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
Every game, it's all on the line. Personal, one-on-one, head-to-head. You have to look for every advantage. Strength, speed, and power to win.
Dan Hampton knows when you're looking for a tough competitor, Chevy Silverado has every advantage. Silverado's Ecotec 3 V8 gets better mileage than Ford's F-150 EcoBoost V6. You heard it here. Plus, Silverado's trailering package delivers 12,500 pounds of towing capacity that guarantees hauling muscle. More power? better performance. That's the kind of advantage that wins games. And there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix Lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy than you ever imagined for less money. Your Chevy dealer knows what it takes to be a winner.
Take it from number 99. Chevy Silverado is an all-star. See your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for details. Kick off the season right. Go for it.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for being with me. I am visiting with Dr. Stan Garrett of The Ohio State University and the director for the McGraw Center for Wildlife Research. We've been talking about, I guess, urban wildlife, urban coyotes, and how they are becoming more prevalent, and also some of the things you can do to avoid them. Stan, before we switch off to technology and the things that are changing the world of research for individuals such as yourself, I have to ask you, though, about raccoons. It seems as though they're living amongst us and have now for a long time. Are their numbers increasing? What do you know more about raccoons than I think anyone on the face of the earth. What's your take on urban raccoons?
I think that they're pretty stable, actually, at the moment. They increased dramatically since the 1940s and 50s, when they were actually at fairly low levels, right after World War II. They increased quite a bit during the 60s. In the 70s, they received a lot of trapping pressure, which really dropped their numbers back down. But then the trapping kind of broke off with the decline in pelt values, and then so during the 1980s and especially during the 1990s. And then again, this is another continent-wide phenomenon. They increased dramatically. It was felt somewhat in the cities, also out in the country, pretty much across the board. They really exploded, and they've pretty much plateaued, but they've maintained a fairly high number across the board ever since.
What enabled their populations to increase in urban areas? The availability of food and shelter? What really kicked them off to where they exploded to today's levels?
Two things. One, definitely food. So probably more than any other animal, they are their classic omnivore. So they truly do eat pretty much anything, and they're so quick to take advantage of novel objects or novel resources, so novel foods, whereas other species might not be able to figure things out for a period of time or actually shy away from things they're not familiar with. Raccoons are the opposite. If it's something they're unfamiliar with, that actually attracts them. So an urban environment is a perfect setting for them. And then, of course, in the cities, you have very limited trapping and hunting, and that is what limits their numbers out in the rural areas.
So they're living with us. I mean, they're on every street, right? I mean, in Chicago and other metropolitan areas, they're well established.
Oh yeah, in fact, in Chicago, we've done a lot of work for over a decade, almost two decades. We've been studying raccoons in different parts of Chicago, and some of the highest densities ever recorded for the animal is what we've documented for some of the forest preserves around Cook County.
And out of curiosity, how do raccoons and coyotes interact? And then we're going to go to technology, but do you find them living together? Do coyotes eat raccoons? How do they live together?
So it would be great if coyotes had actually kind of knocked the raccoon populations down a little bit, but they don't. They will take the occasional young raccoon, raccoons that are only a few months old. But once a raccoon becomes an adult, coyotes are capable of taking them, but in most cases they don't. In fact, for part of our research, we actually video record the interactions between coyotes and raccoons, especially at garbage dumps or picnic groves, that type of thing. And they basically ignore each other for the most part. So I think that raccoons are not the easiest things to to kill for a coyote. I mean, coyotes are 35 pounds. A big raccoon might approach 20-some pounds. So they're a pretty formidable thing for them to take.
So they actually exist together without a coyote attacking a raccoon as though it was easy prey, such as like a smaller dog or something.
Right. I mean, they're not best of friends. So when you see them together, it's not like raccoons are they're just completely ignoring the coyote. They're aware of them and they're wary of them. But we have video of them actually feeding nose to nose in front of each other at the same feeding stations.
So therefore they transmit diseases, I guess, amongst themselves as well. Stan, we're visiting with Dr. Stan Garrett of the Ohio State University and also the McGraw Center for Wildlife Research. Stan, we got about 3 minutes left. You're on the cutting edge of the newest technology using drones and microchips and all these things that didn't exist a few years ago. Do you just want to take a moment, and we'll come back to this certainly as the year goes on, because I know you're doing some research that really is at the forefront. What is, do you think, is the future?
Well, that's quite a question to ask me. What's the future? It's hard to say because things are changing so fast. That's what's most impressive. So you mentioned the drones. 10 years ago, drones were not really available for us to use. I mean, they were being used in some settings, but not in wildlife research. Now we're still learning all of the different things that we can use for drones to be able to monitor the movements of animals. The GPS collars that we use to radio track animals, now we can use satellites to track the animals continuously, which we could never do before. So we're getting high-resolution movements of highly secretive animals, which is opening up windows into their lives that we could not look through before at all. So it's hard to say what it's going to be like even 5 years from now.
So today, this summer, this year, how much is technology impacting your research? And we got about a minute left, Stan. How much? What is it doing for you right now that you couldn't do even 3 years ago?
Well, I just mentioned we're using the GPS collars on raccoons out in the prey pothole regions, which has never been done before, to look at their movements during the waterfowl nesting season. We're using highly evolved genetic techniques to explore the genome of these coyotes to actually look at whether or not they are genetically being selected for as bold or shy animals in urban systems. So that's what we're doing this summer.
Well, Stan, you're kind to join us this morning, and your work is changing the entire world of wildlife research, and thank you very much, and we wish you the best. And for those of you listening, you really heard one of the world's authorities on animals, mammals, coyotes, raccoons, and Stan will be back with you more in the future, and certainly look forward to hearing how technology is going to change your world and hopefully make it more efficient for research. So you've been listening to Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of America and Chicago, 720 WGN. I'll be back next Sunday morning with much more in the great outdoors.